Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
This is a story that we never allowed my father to tell.
Facing life in prison, Sammy the Bull Gravano turned on his boss, John Gotti.
Am I a rat? I took 20 years to help my kids and my family.
A few months later, they're going to kill me to send a message to my father.
This is Phoenix, Arizona.
We were trying to start a new life, but we would definitely fish out of water. There's this whole lifestyle in the middle of the desert, having rave parties.
Ecstasy.
I wanted to control the ecstasy scene here in Arizona. I think I got like 30,000 hits of ecstasy.
We got rid of them in a week.
But then some guys started undercutting us.
English Sean
was the mastermind to our ecstasy empire.
The name Sammy the Bull Gravano entered my sphere. They became the biggest threat to the organization.
I don't give a flying f***. We'll go to war like that.
I just took off running, smoke shooting out the window.
I was prepared to kill him and bury him in the desert.
Everybody knew the consequences of the life.
It was me and my family against the world.
What happened the day of your arrest, Sammy? What you were doing? Was it a normal day?
I was home alone in an apartment. I lived by myself. And I had a little min pin. It's almost like a Mexican chihuahua. It's this big, the dog. And it would growl and bark and whatever. And I was laying in bed. I was always worried about the mafia coming down because I cooperated. I had 5 guns loaded in different places. One in my bathroom, one in my kitchen, one in the living room, one in the spare room. So no matter where I was, I had my gun, which was a .357 Magnum. If I ran out of bullets, I would know where to back up. There was another one loaded, ready to go. So I was laying down sleeping. The dog was between my legs sleeping. And all of a sudden, it gets up and it starts growling. And I looked at him, his name was Petey, and I said, what's the matter, Petey? What's the matter? And his hair on his back is up, and he's growling like crazy. So I went, got up, got the .357 Magnum, put it on the blinds, moved the blinds a little bit, and there's helicopters, armored vehicles, a ton of 20, 30 cops out there. I says, oh my God, here I go. And now I hear boom, 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 boom. They're breaking the door in with the things, and they got shields up. I can't shoot it out. I put the gun down. I come out, my shorts, and they're coming in. My dog is attacking them, this little thing. And this cop with a boot boots the dog, gives him a kick right in the face. The dog goes flying. I got so fucking mad, I jumped up to fucking fight them. And they all jumped me, knocked me down to the floor, beat me up a little bit, shanghaied me, tied my ankles, tied my hands behind my back. And they brought me out of the car, out of the building, into a cop car. There's pictures of me, and you see me getting out of a squad car. I was arrested for the ecstasy. I walk into jail, and I almost dropped dead. I turned around and I looked as I'm going in, and in one cell I see my son-in-law, my son. Another cell I see my wife, my daughter. I was f***ing sick. And that's how it started. Thank God they got out. Not my son or my son-in-law, but my daughter and my wife. They did nothing. My daughter had, they charged her with it. She was pregnant when the ecstasy thing was happening. And her girlfriend called her up on the phone. The phone's a bug. And says, Karen, could you get me some ecstasy? I'm going out with my friends tonight. And she says, no, I don't do that. I'm pregnant. So she says, your boyfriend is, you know, has got some. He's Dave. And so she said, okay. She asked Dave. She got two or three pills, gave it to her girlfriend. That was her charge. My wife, she has no idea of drugs. She's the most legitimate person in the world. They try to set her up. So a guy goes there and tells her that there's a witness. They want $200,000. They could get rid of the witness. My wife is saying, listen, we just walked out of the restaurant that we owned, and you have liquor. I could lose my liquor license. She's worried about losing a liquor license, let alone talking about killing somebody. So when the judge heard the charge, the judge said, this guy's talking to her about paying $200,000 to kill somebody. She's worried about losing her liquor license. No, this is bullshit. And threw the thing out. They wanted to bring her and hold her without bail and threw it out. Thank God she said that. But that's my wife. She would never talk about killing somebody or something like that. You know. But so that's the things we were going through, one after the other, one after the other. So what was yours like?
Mine, I was home the night before. I was laying in bed. I had my newborn son with me because I was separated from my girlfriend. She had her own apartment. I had a newborn son with me in bed. I had a puppy at that point, a puppy pit bull. And I was laying in bed. I was going to go to sleep and the next morning wake up early because I had to be at the construction company by 5 a.m. So I was getting ready to wake up 4 a.m. and drop the kid off and the dog and go to work. But my girlfriend, the one I was separated with, she just had breast implants like the day before. And she called me up at like 11 o'clock at night and was like, please come here. I can't move. I can't get up. I can't go to the bed. I can't do nothing. I can't move. And I was going to drop my kids off there in the morning. So I'm like, okay. I put my son in the car seat, my dog in the car. At 11 o'clock at night, I head up to Scottsdale to the apartment. Now, the cop was outside my house. He must have been sleeping in the car because they were sitting on us before. They were going to raid us that next morning. So I must have snuck out. He didn't see me leave. I left my TV on in my house, and I went up to Scottsdale. Well, early on that next morning, they raided my house. I wasn't even home because I went up to Scottsdale. That morning, I woke up. I left my son there, left the dog there, and I was driving. And actually, I'm wrong. I put my son in the car, the dog. I was dropping him off to my mother's house in the morning. So I was almost to my mother's house. I was running late, so I was trying to call my father. I was trying to call the guy that I was going to go on the job with the next morning. No one was picking up their phone. It was like 6 o'clock in the morning, and no one was picking up any phones. And I got to maybe a block away from my mother's house. I seen helicopters. The closer I got to my mother's house, I seen yellow police tape around the house. So I stopped, made a U-turn, and started. I wasn't going to go there. I knew I was going to get arrested. I called my lawyer, this guy Brian, and I told him what I seen. And then he said that he just heard that Mike Popper's mother got arrested, this, that, and the other thing. He's like, come to my office. So I said, okay. I went back to my girlfriend's house, dropped my son off, my dog, with her. I left my car there. I took her car. Headed to the lawyer's office, went in there, I was talking to him. Within an hour, they surrounded the lawyer's office, they had helicopters, they had a bullhorn come out with your hands up. I wasn't going out nowhere. with my hands up. So my lawyer went out, made a deal with them to come in, give me a few minutes to relax, and I just turned myself in from my lawyer's office. But if they didn't come to my lawyer's office, I was not going to turn myself in. I had every plan on going to Vegas, had the smoke clear, come back 2-3 days later, surrender myself, do a self-surrender a couple of days later. So, but I didn't get that opportunity to do that.
Now, what month and what year was that?
That was February 24, 2000.
Now, while I was in jail on that case, in January of 2000, and 2001? No. Well, when was it?
February 24, 2000, we got arrested.
And in January of 2001, I'm reindicted with the feds on the ecstasy and by the feds now. In the following year, in 2002, I'm indicted on a cold case killing a cop with the Iceman. So I'm indicted, I'm fighting three cases. All three cases, I'm facing life without parole.
Wow.
Three different cases. So I'm having a rough Arizona. Time in Arizona.
Michigan, New York, and Jersey.
Yeah. Arizona, the federal government, and Jersey. Three different cases I'm fighting.
So my original plea, when I signed the plea, I signed my plea, it was 12 to 15 years. I got it down with departure due to conditions of confinement and certain other things, but my original plea was 12 to 15 years that I signed.
I was willing to sign a plea to say I'm retarded. That's why I gave money so that they can buy drugs. Give me fucking 10 years and I'll take it. They said, you're retarded, but you ain't getting no plea.
Originally in Arizona, before the feds even indicted us in 2001, the state offered me 5 years. 5-year plea, the state of Arizona did. And I think they offered you like 12 or something.
No. They talked to the judge in the hallway and they said, What is Sammy facing maximum in the state? He said anywhere between 7 and 12 years, something like that. And the prosecutors, they wanted to change judges. They didn't even want to go in front of him. But then I got arrested 2 more times, like I said, and then the roof was off. Everybody was looking for my blood. And they had nothing on the case, the federal case. My lawyers told me, Sammy, you're not on tape, and you could beat this case. But your son is dead. He's facing 25 years with the state, and he's facing 45 years with the federal government. Now, he was indicted with the feds with me, too. So I said, but what do they want? Sammy, they want you. They want me to do what? Say that you're the boss and say that you approved everything and did everything. You sold 100,000 pills a year with them. I said 100,000. I never took a good pill. You could make a deal. If I make this deal and admit to all these things, what happens? We'll give your son a deal, your son-in-law a deal. Your wife and your daughter did nothing. They'll get kicked out. And I told the lawyers, make the deal. And I took 20 years, a lifetime supervised release and $100,000 fine. And I did 17-7. And by that time, I beat the case with the Iceman. And the judge in Arizona was so mad at that deal. He said it was so above the sentence because there's no violence in the case. He wouldn't give me the 20. He gave me 19, like a slap in the face to them. I'll give him 19 running together with his federal time. That's what he did. So his time ran out before I got out with the feds. And the state case was over in Jersey. And I got out. But when I went in, I said, I'm never getting out. It's over.
How much time did you get?
Yeah, I'll go back to the beginning then. So it was 2 years later after they got you guys, they came for me. It was May 16th, 2002. And like I said, I'd quit the importation a year before. Thought I got away with it. I'm in Scottsdale Community College doing Spanish, going to gym, getting healthy again. And it was in the morning. It was like, bam, 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 bam on the door. So I jump up from the computer, look through the people, and it's blacked out. 10P, please, we've got a warrant. Open the door, open the door. And I hear all these boots coming up the stairs to the apartment. So my girlfriend's in the bedroom. I'm talking to her, I'm like, what are we going to do? We better let them in. So we're walking through the living room, and then just boom, door flies off the hinges. Hands above your heads. Get on the ground now. Don't effing move. And you just see them like fan out, and they've got these visors on, the protective glass. Right. And the eyes just, you know, your life is over in seconds if these guys open up on you. So they crushed me, and then they hoisted me up by the handcuffs. And the detective, who I learned from the paperwork when I read all my paperwork in the jail, he'd been sitting next to me in restaurants and everything, for, like following me, because we've been doing it for years and he'd been on my tail for years. And he just yanks me up and he's in my face, English Sean, you're a big name for the rave scene. We finally got you. And I start yelling to my girlfriend, I'm exercising my right to remain silent. I'm exercising my right to remain silent. I'm exercising my, and they just like, I'm in my boxer shorts, handcuffed, and they like take me down the outside stairs, put me in a cop car, and I'll never forget the journey to Tempe Police Department. So the prosecutor was there. There was loads of cops, all kinds of people out, you know, going in and out of the apartment. I learned that was a prosecutor later on when I saw her in the court. But I'm in this cop car going to Tempe Police Station, and the cop's got those aviator sunglasses on, like out of that movie, Electric Guide in Blue. He's playing 98 KUPD hard rock on his, and he's got the, you know, he's chewing the tobacco. And I'm looking out across the desert, and I'm thinking, oh my God, you know, I'm gonna have to pay for all my crimes now. The day of reckoning has come. So they took us first. They had like these prefab buildings out somewhere in Tempe where they took us to like check us all in, all the different co-defendants. And I didn't realize, I thought they just got me. But once we got in the cells and more of my people are in there and they're telling me, you know, one of my guys, he's driving around all day and helicopters are following around. He's like, I thought I was in Goodfellas or something. I thought I was going crazy. And then I was on the freeway. And all these motorbikes pull in. They take me off the fucking freeway. And I'm thinking, how much money have they spent on this case? We might be fucked here, guys. We might be fucked. But it wasn't until I got to the horseshoe. And, I wrote a whole chapter in my book, Hard Time, about the horseshoe, that things really started to unfold. I mean, what was your experience in the horseshoe? Can you explain to the viewers the horseshoe at the Madison Street Jail? It's a nightmare. Yeah.
I spent a week in there. Every time I got to the end to go to prison, they page two'd me and sent me all the way back to the beginning. I got page two'd five times.
No.
I spent
a
week. Yeah, then, see what he says. Yep. And what happened after you got in?
Yeah, well, the beginning of the horseshoe for me, it was like there's a little old lady behind plexiglass screen. Have you got AIDS? Have you got scabies? Have you got hepatitis? Asking you all these screening questions. Then they take your sneakers, your belt, all that shit. And then it's like a horseshoe formation, isn't it? First cell, squeezed in there. There's like gangbangers, different rivalries popping off. Hobos pissing on the floor and people trying to sleep under the bunks, and there's all kinds of crap, and some big guy takes a shit, and everyone's fucking, the whole cell stunk out. And I thought it was bad for us because we were in there for like, it seemed like two or three. You don't even know what day it is. The heat rises and the heat falls. You're just going from cell to cell to cell. But man, I can't imagine, Gerard, could you take us through that week, what that was like? In the horseshoe?
It was hell. I would try to get in underneath the bunk where it was shoulder to shoulder. Who's throwing up? Who's drunk? Who's high? I would use an orange as a pillow, and it was the most miserable thing. It was literally hell. The horseshoe was the worst.
Yeah.
You almost begged them to take you to prison. Please take me to prison. Take me to jail. Just to get a mattress and a pillow. I spent a week there. And I thought I was going to die. That was the worst experience I had, was the horseshoe. Carney was pretty bad too.
Did anything pop off in the cells while you were in the horseshoe around you?
Yeah. Yeah, but you don't even pay attention. People fall over you. You don't pay attention. Yeah, there's fights. There's all sorts of things going on in there. There's fights in there. You just try to stay out of everyone's way, but it's almost impossible because you're on a bunk that's maybe, I don't know, 4 feet wide, and there's 8 people on, and literally people laying on top of each other. Like, yeah, it was unbelievable. It was the worst experience. The horseshoe was bad.
When we arrived at the horseshoe, so we were in a van coming from Tempe, and it was like the first group of co-defendants. They did this all in groups over the months. I think it was about a dozen of us. So it's half female, half male. And in the intake area, people are like in the line to go in. And the guys are like heckling the females. Now, our females get out of the van first. And the guys who are waiting to go in, some of them start saying obscene things to our females. Now, Wildman, who's my best friend from childhood, he's got red dots in his head telling him to hurt people since he was a kid. He used to pick school teachers up and just throw them in garbage bins. They had him outside raking leaves with the caretakers. They were so scared of him. He grew so big. When he's going to do something crazy, his face remains completely calm, but one eyebrow always goes up, and I know that's the signal. So he's in the van, and he's watching his missus, Wild Woman. She's from England. She was another co-defendant. They had her rank number 2, actually, above him in the organization, which pissed him off. He was number 3. So anyway, she gets off, and these intake guys, the new arrivals, you know, people have been in fights, tased, all this drunk. They start heckling Wild Woman. A Wild Woman, you know, she's a tough woman. They had video footage of her in Tempe chasing Wildman down the street with a fan, trying to smash his head in. But she was having a bad day and her head was down, and Wildman's watching this. And I just see the eyebrow go up, and he gets to the step, the top step of the van, and the redneck sheriff's deputy's like, get the fuck down. And he's been up for a week on crack and meth, and he's not slept, and he's got this crazy beard, and his eyes are blood red, and he's handcuffed, and he puts his head back, and the guard's yelling him to get down, and he just yells at all these fellas, you lot, disrespecting our women, I'll be in there with all of you in a minute, and I'll fucking have any of you. You think I won't? And he cocks his head back a bit more, and his veins are popping out. And he just, he widens his eyes, and he just goes, and they all shut the fuck up right away. I'm not a tough guy. Look at these piano playing hands. But Wildman, like I said, I was just the guy who had gangsteritis from hanging out with people like Wildman, and the door he opened to that world. But he was a hell of a good guy to get arrested with, because right away, the word spread in the jail, you know, that Wildman was with us. So we go through the horseshoe, 2 or 3 days, whatever the fuck it was. And at the end of it, the male co-defendants are all together. They call us out. We're in the stripes, black and white stripes, pink underwear. Sheriff Joe, thank you. And they house most of them to Durango. And then they house me and Wildman to Towers, separate towers in Towers Jail. And that's how the journey started from there. And that's when we just got into the mix then with all the prisoners. And that was, I got a whole load of stories from there. So, Sammy, what about you going through the horseshoe?
Yeah, well, I, you know, when I went in, I was in, you know, with the pink underwear with Joe Arpaio. I did an interview with him. The green bologna sandwiches, all of these things. I had maybe fucking five fights. I fought all the time in there. There was one kid that didn't want me to sit with them. There was a guy who was black and Spanish mixed. And when I finally got out into the tier, he had a seat and he pointed over here. I was coming over with my tray. The guy said, no, you can't sit at our table. So he went to get up. I put my hand on his leg. I pushed him down. I said, no, relax, relax. I got this. He's right. And I got up and I was walking out. I hit this guy with the tray, square in the face. He went down. I pulled his shirt over as I was stomping him, beating him. Boom, in the hole. Then they found out what happened. They let me back into this pod. And I got up on, I was on the second floor. And I, as soon as they opened my door, everybody was out already, opened my door. I says, anybody give a fuck where I sit? Nobody said a word. I came in, and then I had a few beefs in there. And every time I got into a beef, I had a fight, and I did what I had to do. I was determined when I was in there, I'm gonna kill somebody or I'm gonna die myself. But I'm not gonna back up. No matter who it is, I'm gonna have that reputation. Not that I'm Sammy the Bull, but that I'm gonna fight. I don't give a fuck. Who you are, how big you are, I don't care about nothing. I had that attitude. I got a strings of tattoos and stuff. I didn't have any on me, but when I went in there, I started tattooing up, put my, let him go out. And then put him, you know, my hat on and said, I'm just going to go to war. Wherever it comes, it comes. Wherever it goes, it goes. So I did have about, you know, all them years about, 5, 6, 7 fights, tough ones. And but nobody bothered me after that. They knew that this guy's not going to stop. You want to stop me? You got to kill me. Or knock me cold. You got to kill me. And then I had that little bit of a reputation in there, and nobody bothered me. And I got along with Mexican Mafia guys. I got along with a Familia. I got along with the AB guys. And nobody bothered me. So, I mean, they were allies. They, you know, we became friends. We played chess together. We played ball together. And if I was getting up to fight, 2, 3, 4 guys would get up with me. I didn't ask them to, but they did. So nobody bothered me no more. You know, when you talk about our family is about the toughest Mexican gang I've come across in prison, and you talk about the ABs, they're all killers. And when you're friendly with them, you, who's going to bother you?
Hope you're enjoying the podcast. It's a word from my sponsor, NordVPN. As many of you know, I am inundated with links from hackers and cyber bandits trying to steal my channel. I've lost it twice, actually. But now with NordVPN, with just one click, I am safe. There are so many attacks out there that Nord protects you from, half of which I've never even heard of before. You got the man in the middle attack, you're at a cafe, you think you're using the free Wi-Fi, boom, they steal your sensitive data. You've got phishing, you've got password attacks, you've got DDoS. Yes, I got one of them. They tried to shut down my live stream. We've got malware, we've got malvertising, we've got ransomware. And also, if you want to watch something overseas, my documentary of Sammy the Bull is coming out in January in America. Guess where my VPN will be set at? There's nothing worse than a VPN that slows you down, but NordVPN is the fastest VPN out there. You can get an exclusive NordVPN deal plus 4 months extra here at my link, /NordVPN.com/Atwood. It's risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Link is in the description box if you're watching on YouTube. Again, it's /NordVPN.com/Atwood. Cheers.
You know.
Yeah, I knew a guy called Long Island. He said he played chess with you. I think it was in Supermax through the talking through the doors, and you used to draw your movements and stuff like that.
Yep.
What did you think about the food in Sheriff Joe Arpaio's jail?
Oh, it was horrible. Do you know that was you get a piece of white bread and a piece of rye bread. And who had like the, what do you call that, mole on it? So you had to cut it off before. It was horrible. I had a meeting with him not too long ago. And, you know, it was, it is what it is. It was a tough time. I remember if it was 110 or 115 outside, it was 125 inside. They'd give you a salt pill. I see guys sitting on a thing and just keel over. They dried out. So you had to drink a lot of water, eat the salt. The pink underwear is trying to humiliate you. It didn't bother me. I didn't give a shit what color my underwear was or the T-shirt or anything like that. I don't know. It was tough. I mean, but I got through that. And I got through almost 20 years of it straight. I got 22 years in prison. I get along in prison. I don't like it. I hate it. But I get along. I don't try to bully anybody or do anything like that. But if you're going to fuck with me, I'm going the whole route. That was my reputation in prison. But when you courteous to people and you're not really trying to bother them. I remember one time there was a priest in there who told me about some stuff that priests do. And I said, listen, get away from me. And he started arguing with me. And I slapped him. And the guy grabbed me. My lawyer came in, found out about it. He said, Sammy, are you crazy? I said, why? He said, you're going to hit a priest? It's going to come out in the paper. They're going to think you're completely out of your mind. I said, bro, this guy's a stone degenerate. I don't care if he's a priest. He's a stone degenerate. He's talking bullshit to me. I told him to get away from me, and he wouldn't. So there's all kinds of stories in prison and shit, you know. I mean, there's all kinds of weirdos. And there's a lot of good guys in there, too. So I try to play cards or play balls. They could be dangerous guys, but they were normal. You could talk to them. You could play cards with them. You could joke. You could laugh. But some guys, you just can't. They're just, you know, and not that they belong in prison, but they belong in prison, I think. They're just bent. So that was my thing in all those years. But I made it through. I didn't think I would because I do have a little bit of a temper and I'm ready to go. So I figured sooner or later I'm going to get, you know, jammed up. Especially when I got a reputation like that. Guys, if they were going to have a fight with me, they're going to try to hurt me because they think I'm going to come back. But it worked the opposite. They said, this guy ain't a bad guy. We could play cards with him. We could do whatever. And it was always me and the guys, really the rough guys, who were against the system more than each other. You know, sometimes the system makes you tighter because we're going through the same thing. Me and you are in an area. We're eating the same shit food and the same conditions. And before you know it, we're getting tight, even if we didn't even know each other. So that's what happened with me. I filled in with people like that, and I did my time, minded my business.
How's your family? How did they, like now? Not back then. I know they probably went through hell, you in America. They weren't in America at that time when you got arrested, did they?
They came out and visited me, flew 5,000 miles every year. I was blessed to have such good family. And, you know, when you first see your mom, she's been stood outside trying to get into Towers Jail for hours. She's talking to all the Mexican families and they're telling her, you know, all the sad stories, what they're going through. And her heart was just breaking hearing these stories. And then you're trying to get in. They got these redneck guards yelling at you. And they got the sniffer dogs. And they're patting everybody down. And then you see your mom. First time. You know, my biggest fear was they were going to find out about what I've been doing. My parents. You get called to visitation. And your mom's just crumpled up over a visitation table. And she looks like she's aged 10 years because of your fucked up behavior. Causing all this stress on her. It just broke my heart, man, to see my mom, to put my mom in that position. It's you know, and I still feel sick to my stomach to this day because they did have my back. You know, I planned it that if I got arrested, my mates would have money. I flew people over from the UK, put money in their names, they would use that. I wouldn't have to fall back on my parents. The cops had Department of Justice put a virus in my computer, a Netbus Trojan horse, which showed them all the money. So they seized that as soon as I was arrested. So when I had to make that call and tell my family, you know, what I'd done, and I needed a lawyer because those New Mexican Mafia guys, they told me, they schooled me in etiquette, and they said, look, Sean, if the shit ever really hits the fan, get Alan Simpson. He's a loophole lawyer, but he's expensive. He's 50 grand down. And my parents, they had to remortgage their house because I'm not from a wealthy family. And they had business plans, and they were getting retirement, and they were going to open a business, a walking business, and all that was sacrificed so they could get a lawyer, because if they hadn't, facing 200 years, there's quite a chance I'd still be in prison right now, because I learned in America you get what justice you can afford. So, yeah, to answer your question, I just feel so lucky and so blessed. I saw people repeatedly getting involved in drugs, and the families would just disown them. And my sister, she came to see me as well. She had to have counseling. My mum had a nervous breakdown over the whole situation. And sadly, my sister, she had a daughter who was born with leukemia at age one. She had chemotherapy, which saved her life. But now, over 10 years later, her kid's having hundreds of seizures every week. My sister's up every night watching her. They've got to have medical people coming over once or twice a week so my sister can sleep. So, yeah, she's going through a lot, man. But, yeah, that's how we're doing.
It's hard on the families, Sean. But hearing you talk, they're lucky to have you for a son, because there's a lot of guys who go into prison, put their family through that, and they don't give a fuck.
And it comes
through. You too care, and you're lucky to have you. You're a good man.
And it comes through on the documentary. I mean, you're definitely lucky. A lot of people, a lot of families fall apart after things like that.
Yep.
Yeah, the documentary, your mother and father, and just to see that dynamic of you guys talking and what they went through, because people don't realize when you get in trouble and you commit crimes and you go to prison, you don't just hurt yourself, you hurt everyone around you.
Yep.
And you destroy everything around you. It's like a wrecking ball.
But they're lucky to have you, that you really care about what you did, and that's part of it. It's good for them and it's good for you, and it's good for me to hear that, because you're a good man, period. I know you don't have to go further. And or anybody else hearing it, they're going to see it. They'll know it. And that's what fucking prison is. That's what it does. Not only to a tough guy, to anybody, and to their families and everybody else. So I hope that listening to this conversation, this part of the conversation, I hope it helps a lot of people to understand what prison's about. It's not just you sitting in a fucking prison cell. It's about people who are waiting and choking to death, listening to the shit that you're going through. So my hat's off to you, bro.
Appreciate that. And there's one more thing then to go over them, if you guys have got to go. Something that did stress my family out was, as I was rising up the ranks on YouTube, you know, I helped a few guys out, and these guys turned against me. And they basically said I'd made up the whole Sammy the Bull story. They tricked you into a live stream. I think they asked you some questions, misleading questions, into saying, yeah, I don't know this Atwood guy. He's full of shit. I've never met him. Blah, blah, blah.
Do I know Sean Atwood? Now, that came up a couple of times. He's in England. He has some sort of a talk show. And he keeps bullshitting that he met me in Arizona. He was in the ecstasy business, and we bunked heads. If we would have bunked heads, I would be picking his teeth, picking my teeth, his bones out of my teeth, out of my teeth. I never knew him. I never met him. He's full of shit. And I sent a message to somebody I'm friendly with in England and said, why does this guy keep using my fucking name like he knows me, and he's trying to make a name out of, like he's a tough guy or something. I really don't have an opinion on this guy.
And they use that. They put that out in a video that went to over a million people, and they said I'd made up the Sammy the Bull story, and I was actually a pedophile, and I'd gone to prison for foul charges. And that, people started attacking me, sending messages to my mum. My mum was having sleepless nights. Now, I don't usually address trolls and bullshit like that. I just don't want to give them any attention.
Right.
But
right.
This got so heavy, it was affecting my family members. And I'd just like to use this opportunity for you, Sammy, to clarify to the public, you know, that message. I'll play that message when I put this out. I don't know outward. You know, I'll be picking his bones out of my teeth if this was true, all that stuff. Just the context. I know these guys misled and clickbaited you and tricked you into saying that. But if you could just put that into context, and it will set, because to this day, people, even this week, a channel with 500,000 subs is saying he's made all this Sammy the Bull. It's still going to this day.
Yeah. Well, listen, you're a gentleman the whole time. We never had that kind of a problem. I was stupid. I was goaded into saying what I said, because when I heard it, I knew it wasn't true. But then I found out that you weren't saying that. So, and I apologize for listening to that crap and reacting to it. So I apologize for that. And 100%, me and him never had a problem. None of this bullshit that was said about him, about me, about our relationship, or any of those things was true. It was not true. And I apologize again and again for even paying attention to it. I should have threw it away like you did, but I didn't. I reacted to it. I don't know the guy. I'll rip his head off, whatever I said. I'll pick his bones out of my teeth. That was a reaction of, I was goaded into that reaction. I don't feel like that, obviously, towards him. I have a ton of respect for him. And all this stuff was made up about him. And as far as him being a, that's the furthest truth, the truth as well. I wouldn't be sitting here talking with him if that was, if there was any kind of truth to that. And I know for a fact there's no truth to that.
And I can put that into content a little bit even more. So you got to realize, I mean, even after we got out, I still to this day get messages that my father sold pills to someone, and we kept getting messages and people that we were selling pills for you, or he was literally, and we all know the truth, he wasn't. And so it was like, you know, you're selling pills for Sean, and him saying, well, I don't even know Sean. I never sold pills for no one in my life. And there was anger over it, because the truth is he's never sold a pill in his life. And we still get that to this day, of people, who's our cousin, who's related to us, who we bought drug, they bought. I have people saying they bought ecstasy literally directly from him, which some right now I laugh over it when I hear it, but I still hear it to this day, unfortunately. So that's kind of where that stemmed from, us buying, you buying drugs from him, or either or.
Yeah, and that was what my reaction was. When, you know, you could say what I am, you could say whatever you want, but to say something that I'm not, so I understand what you're saying, it gets you really fucked up. Now, I got that too. I got guys, because I'm being successful, is breaking my chops, jumping on me, I'm a liar, I'm this, I'm that. They have nothing, they don't have a story, they have nothing to say. But I've gotten over that shit with hearing them. They mean nothing to me. Absolutely nothing. That's all they know, is to put people down who are successful and try and change their life and do things. And that's all they want to do, is put you down or call you a liar. But I'm here to say right now on this interview, he's not a fucking liar. I know a lot about him now. And he's none of those things. And we don't have any bad blood between us. I could say I don't have no bad blood towards him or his family. And seeing the thing, my heart went out to his mother and his father and his family. I heard them. I know them. I saw them. Don't believe any bullshit you hear from other people. So hopefully this sets the record straight between me and him, and my son and him, and everybody else.
I think we could all agree.
Yeah,
I don't think we ever seen my father in a rave waving glow sticks, dancing in the middle of the dance floor. So I don't think that's ever happened.
No, with feathers. So,
I really appreciate you setting the record straight, Sammy. because it has been a concern, and it did stress my mum and dad out, which is my priority. And when my mum and dad watch this, they're going to watch this. They're excited about it, and they're going to hear what you say, and that's going to really, you know, ease that situation for them. So from that,
good. Tell them I love them. If they ever want to talk to me personally, off of things personally on the phone or something, it'd be my pleasure. You got a great son, and you're a great family for backing him. And that's all I can say. And you want to talk to me personally at any time, or you need me for anything at any time, give me a holler. Your family.
We all make mistakes.
Yep.
Yeah. And if there's anything you need from us here across the pond, you just let me know.
What about a stack of 20s? All right, bro. I gotta go. I got other people, bro. It's been a pleasure. And we'll talk again. And I like the idea. I love this conversation. I think this is a conversation. If I'm ever get off parole, I would love to come to England and do some shows like Michael was doing with you. And I think we'll blow it away. So have a great day, a great life. Love you, bro.
All right. Much all now. Take care, fellas. Cheers.
All right. Bye-bye.
Cheers.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.